Nice. Okay, part two. Here we go. Welcome back, everybody. Hello. Picking up where we left off. So yeah, I was prepping for the conference. It's funny because so much has happened between even when I recorded the last episode and now. It's just, man, things are happening at a rate that is almost too fast to convey. And I love it. I'm so along for the ride, riding the wave of reality. It just is so fun, dude. It's intense, and it just keeps picking up, but I know that we can handle it because here we are. It wouldn't be happening to us if we couldn't handle it. So, the rage wave, everything that happened with Lugia, that whole sequence, the red hat, I mean, the whole thing was just absolutely incredible. And it put me in this headspace of everything is completely okay. No matter what it is that I'm experiencing, no matter how I'm feeling, it is okay. And it will pass. And I don't need to try to escape any feelings. I don't need to escape any portion of this reality. I can be with it. And the more I experience unresisted reality, the more I prefer it. So, yeah, dude, it was like the ultimate conference prep because these synchronicities provide this. It's like this connection that is more energy inducing or energy cultivating than I don't know anything. It's like a remembering of who we are. And in that space of recognizing that the synchronicities aren't just happening to us, we are doing them. We are a part of it. It's infinitely complex, and we are a part of that infinite complexity in an absolutely essential way. In the same way that any cell in my body, our bodies, is, you know, as essential as all of the cells. It's like we're all one giant universal organism of the universe experiencing itself. And so that's what I was feeling. I felt like I had dissolved all of the stress, at least for the time being, of how is this going to go? How am I going to make sure that I hit all the points I need to hit and convey everything correctly, yada, yada, yada. It was just like, I'm good. It's going to be great. There's no doubt about it. And I remember when I was a few days before I left, I hung out with my friend Michael, my old roommate, and he said this thing to me when I was talking to him and his girlfriend Alex. I was telling them all about the conference and stuff, and it was really helpful chatting with them. And right before I left, Michael said this thing because we were laughing about how, you know, the conference had like a whole sheet of all the, a schedule of all the people that were speaking at it. And at the very beginning was my keynote, and all the other speakers had like blocks at different times. And it was just so funny going through the list of all the speakers, and it was all like people with degrees that were, you know, like so-and-so, MD, so-and-so, you know, just like professional people. And then it's just Sebastian Scales, no title. I think it said comedian, podcaster, and nonprofit founder, which is, I loved that. That's what I am. It's what I do. It was just funny in the context of, like, you know, all these like super well-trained speakers, and then just, yeah, me. And so we were laughing about that. And then Michael made a really good point. It really resonated with me because basically what he said was they're bringing you in for you. They're bringing you to this conference for you to be there. It's not for anything in particular that you're going to say. It's how you're going to say it. It's you. They're hiring you for you. And he said it in this way that just totally hit me, like, you know, like, yeah, I am enough going there. It's enough for me to show up there. Like, I don't have to grind through the preparations and make sure that I don't say anything wrong or, you know, convince anyone that I'm worthy of being there or anything like that. I literally don't have to do anything other than be myself. And it's so counter intuitive in terms of typical preparation. And yet it felt so liberating to really register that and be like, yeah, I mean, they're hiring me for me. And what a feeling. You know, so much of my life I've been putting on a mask to try to be accepted. And this feels like, you know, it's like the first time that I've been hired for doing what I believe is most in line with my authentic self. And it was totally in line with, again, this trusting of the unfolding and like trusting that I don't have to memorize everything. I can just get up there and do my thing and it'll be great. And, you know, it's not some sort of a test. Even if I fucked up everything that I was going to say, like nobody, if I forgot all the stuff that I was supposed to say, like nobody would know that except for me. So yeah, it was a message that came at the perfect time. So thank you, Michael. And then, you know, the entire, I basically didn't really prep. Like I worked on the PowerPoint, but for the most part, like I had notes that I had written down. It was probably like 40 slides maybe on this PowerPoint. And I think I had notes on the first like five slides. And I wasn't sure what the situation was going to be, like if I was going to have the ability to look at my notes. But it just didn't, I don't know. It just felt like it was going to be okay. And so I flew to Chicago and I woke up the morning of the conference and I was feeling like nervous, but again, like more just, it's like, I think it's possible to be, you know, you can know that you are okay and that everything is okay while still simultaneously experiencing any emotion. So like with this nervousness, I remember being aware of it and also being like, this is fine. This doesn't have to induce any sort of anything, any panic, any worry. It's like I can just be nervous and still know that this is going to be great. And that acceptance transforms every experience. It instantly. Any experience without resistance is just, it's just so, dude, it's literally a completely different reality. And it feels like the neuroplasticity of it builds quickly. You keep having experiences with, like, I have yet to have an experience that I did not resist that wasn't, like, infinitely better than the experiences that I resisted. The same experience. So I was, you know, I wasn't even working through that nervousness. I was just allowing it to be there and then realizing and feeling how fine it is. And then the time came to give the speech, and it was in this big ballroom. There were probably like 300 or 400 people there. And the host, her name was Kim. She's awesome. She introduced me. And I got up there, and basically the whole speech was structured around feelings and, you know, lots of stuff that we've talked about in this podcast before. Basically, I was saying how feeling suppressed emotion is the way to heal from the experience that caused the emotion to arise in the first place. Like when we don't feel our suppressed emotion, we carry that emotion around in our bodies that, you know, when we suppress an emotion, it arises in our body and then we restrict it instead of feeling it. And so basically what I was talking about is my experience with feeling feelings and what happens as a result of allowing this suppressed emotion to come up and how transformative it is and how much more enjoyable it is to move through reality when you're not carrying around the emotional baggage of the past, and how you can feel everything more deeply. You're able to experience what's happening in the moment without the like sensory blinders of the baggage. Like all the energy that you're allocating into suppressing emotion flows back into your now reality as you release that suppressed emotion, and then you have that energy available to feel what's happening in a much more intense way. Also, you're not, you know, carrying around these ties to the trauma. So most of us in traumatic experiences have the opposite experience of feeling. We shut down, we go numb, we do lots of different defense mechanisms to cope with what's happening. And I was talking about how this is what I did, you know, during the molestation. I told the story of the molestation pretty briefly. I should also say they gave me an hour and a half, which was, you know, that was it was a long time. But as I started telling the story, I immediately realized like how much fun I was having. Like I was on stage and I was telling the story of the molestation, and I sort of kept it pretty short because most of the audience is like, you know, have heard these stories a million times. And I told them what they needed to know for the context of the rest of the story. But then when I got to the trial portion, I had the recordings that I had gone through that induced all of this rage and Lugia and all this stuff. And I played, the first recording I played was of the moment where the defense attorney objects to me being asked about how it felt to tell my mom. And he objects for irrelevancy. Actually, I'll just play the clip. I'll play the clip.
At some point that next week, did you talk to your mom about what had been happening to you?
Yes.
Where were you?
I was in the kitchen.
Where was your mother?
Sitting on a stool next to the kitchen.
And did you tell her that you had been sexually abused?
Yes.
How did it feel to tell her?
Objection, Your Honor, irrelevant.
Great.
Why did it feel great?
Because it was a huge thing off my chest.
What was your mother's reaction?
Objection, Your Honor, irrelevant.
She was.
Dude, okay. First of all, right away, you can spend hours on that one sequence alone. Like, just the emotional impact on a kid of being asked, how did it feel to tell your mom? And the defense attorney's like, objection, Your Honor, irrelevant. What? Dude, your feelings are irrelevant. And every time, that, I mean, he literally objected constantly to everything. And like, I doubt there's any defense attorneys here, so we're good. My God, what an insane idea. But like, what? Professional child manipulator would be more appropriate. But I remember every time that objection would happen, I panicked. It was like, ah! You know, it was like this spooky moment of feeling like I had done something wrong. And also, I don't know if you caught it, but when the prosecuting attorney asks, how did it feel to tell your mom, I go, grr, and then he goes, objection, irrelevant, and then the judge goes, overruled, and I knew what that meant at the time, so I just go, great. Like, without being prompted again, I'm like, great. you know? And this went on over a period of 2 days, just for my testimony, for like 4 hours each. It was a 2-week trial also. All my friends had to testify. But yeah, like even just the emotional impacts of that alone, like it imbues, like is injected into the kid's brain that like your feelings are irrelevant and you will be attacked for sharing it.
So I played this clip and it was so fun because I like realized as I was doing this, like I hadn't planned to do this moment of flipping off, like acting out, flipping off. I guess if you're listening, you wouldn't have seen it, but I act out flipping off the defense attorney as my 11-year-old self answering these questions. And it felt so good, dude. Like it was sort of like, you know, it was like being so, because I had spent so much time experiencing the emotions of that sequence by going through the testimony, it was like I was able to very quickly tap back into the feeling of the situation, but without all of the rage, because the rage had been processed, or at least some of it. So I was able to go back in and still explain and express what I was feeling, but it was in a much lighter way. Like I was like, you know, the thing about like I remember being excited as I was reenacting the, yeah, like great, you know, and then acted out. It was just, it was so easy, dude. And it was improvised. It was just like being in the moment with the audience. And as I'm recounting these things and sort of allowing myself to go back into these experiences without fear and highlighting what it was like. And I think it was just, it was really cool because, you know, I was having so much fun with this sequence that had caused me a lot of deep suppressed emotion to come up like just a few days beforehand. But you know, as we release that suppressed emotion, what's left is lightness. And that's what it felt like. You know, I felt very light when I was conveying the absurdity of the trial. And I felt very, like it was energizing. It wasn't heavy. It felt good. It was therapeutic for me to share this with the audience and with all these people that really knew, really understood, because they've been through a lot of these types of sequences. So also it was cool, you know, I popped up like a photo of my younger self and had that, you know, on the screen during the molestation story. And I think it was just quite trippy because I hadn't done anything like that before, you know, having sort of the visual and audio aids with the presentation. And it was just, yeah, I just felt it was so cool. So I played a few more clips and I just remember feeling like, oh my God, like this. Like I had a timer on my phone going to keep track. And I remember looking at my phone and I don't know how much time had passed, but a lot of time had passed and I hadn't covered anywhere near the amount that I had planned to cover by that time period. And it felt, what I felt though in that moment was not panic. It was like, excitement. It was like a recognition of how well this is going and how good this is feeling. It felt like the most effortless on-stage experience that I've had. And the fact that it was like when I let go of all of the preconceived notions of like, or ways of how I thought it should go, and just allowed myself to tell the story in the way that felt right. Humor naturally evolved out of it. And also like sadness, like, well, I'll get into this, but it was just, you know, without it needing to be a setup and a punchline, it was just effortlessly funny and it felt so good. And it was funny in like probably the least, if you were to, I mean, besides maybe the molestation of the whole story, it would probably be like, you know, traditionally considered the least funny part of that whole sequence. I mean, this was not a stand-up show. This was a conference for child abuse advocates. And it was like, we're all cracking up at a freaking testimony of an 11-year-old boy who got molested. And like the whole room is like, we're having a good time. And I think a huge part of it is, you know, this is, even though it was my first time doing a keynote, you know, it's like, that's what I've learned doing stand-up is like, people feel how you feel. And I felt so good up there. And it felt like, you know, people, it gives people the opportunity to feel however they want to feel instead of how they think they need to feel in order to appropriately navigate the situation, which generally has the approach of like very sort of tense seriousness. And I think the opposite, and I get that completely, but I also, for me, the opposite seems to be a lot more manageable and a lot more enjoyable to tell the experience in, you know, whatever way feels good, which at sometimes is intertwined with sadness. It's just the spectrum of emotions, which was another point of the underlying theme of all of this was to allow every emotion. So looking at the clock, realizing, oh man, I just spent a ton of time on this sequence. And but again, like there's Bashar talks about, I just watched this video today about aging. And somebody asks Bashar, how can you slow down the process of aging? And he basically talks about how, I could just play the clip too, maybe I will.
Is there a way I can slow down my aging process? There was somebody who-
By living in the moment. And you know how you live in the moment? You follow your passion to the best you can with no insistence or assumption as to what the outcome is supposed to be. That's how you accelerate your vibration. And by contrast, accelerating your vibration allows you to slow down and live in the moment. And that's how you become ageless.
Slowing down the molecular level of the aging process through meditation.
Living in the moment. Because you know how when you're acting on your passion, it seems like time passes in a flash?
Yes.
You've had that experience?
Yes.
So if you are doing something you love to do and you're in that state of being and it appears like or feels like maybe 15 minutes has passed, then you look up and reconnect with the world and oh, it's been 2 hours or 3 hours. What you feel was the time that passed, the 15 minutes, is all you've actually aged. Even though you might reconnect with the world 3 hours later and catch up to the consensus reality of time, if you only experienced 15 minutes in that experience of joy, you have actually only aged 15 minutes. That's how you become ageless. You collapse time. You live in the moment. You don't experience as much time because you're not focusing on so many details that you need more time to focus on them. You're acting holistically. You're living more in the now, which is timeless.
And that's what it felt like. It was like, holy cow, I am so engaged in this moment of this presentation where I just feel like I actually remember in that moment being like, I could just stay up here. I mean, I've got hours and hours of content, quote unquote, from the trial, and I could just go off. Like, we could spend hours breaking down one of the clips. And it was just it was so exciting to be in that moment, realizing how well this is going and how good it feels. And all of this, it was so amazing, dude. So kept going with the story, and it was so cool because I got to tell the whole sequence. You know, the aftermath, the impacts of the molestation, of the trial on myself and my relationships, my life in high school and then college and then starting stand up. And I got to play. It actually worked out really well to just play a stand up recording instead of being like, here, I'm going to do jokes now. You know, I just played it and that seemed it really totally landed. And I think it's because of everything that had happened before. You know, if I had just probably come out and just done stand-up or just played my recording right away, I think it would have had a completely different effect. But people knew that I was feeling good. It felt like the whole audience was open. It was like they were matching what felt like my level of openness with the story. And yeah, so that went really well. And then I got to tell the whole EMDR story, which I think is it's like episode 10 of this podcast, where when I went back, I did EMDR and I went back to the trial and took my younger self out of the courtroom by the hand and talked to him and all this stuff. So it's like, dude, I got to tell that part of the story with the whole context of everything that had happened before. And then I told the other EMDR where I need Jim in the head and like just all this stuff. And that was when I first started seeing people crying in the audience. And I remember in that moment, you know, feeling like, I guess again, it's like excitement, you know. I was so excited that people felt that they could feel that way, you know, like, because we're welcoming in the whole spectrum of emotions. We're not saying that, you have to keep it together because you're at a conference or whatever. It's just like, however you feel right now is welcome. And I didn't have my glasses on, so I couldn't see the people that were further back, but just the first couple of rows, I was making so much eye contact with the people there, and it was incredible, the acknowledgement and encouragement, like the nods of encouragement that I was seeing people giving me. And then there were, you know, some of the people that I had seen like cracking up earlier on were now in tears. And I was like, this is amazing. I felt so deeply connected with everyone. It was like on the level of as if we were all just, it was like we were having a one-on-one conversation. That's kind of how it felt like. I remember this feeling too of being like, oh my God, it doesn't matter how many people I'm speaking in front of. It doesn't matter if it's one or 300 or 3,000. It's like this recognition of just like, I feel comfortable. I feel comfortable doing this more now than ever. And doing it in this way, you know, where everything is okay. Every emotion is okay. Every response is okay. I mean, it just felt like just like a space of total openness. And being like, I was supposed to go for an hour and 15 and then have 15 minutes of Q&A. I just used up the whole hour, and they said it was fine either way, but I just used up the whole hour and a half. And by the end of it, I mean, I remember just, I didn't really want it to end. I felt like I could have just kept going and just, I would have loved it. And it's obviously all good, but it was an amazing feeling to be like, just that comfy. And that scene, you know, it felt like everyone was there. Like there was even a moment, I think I told this, I must have told this story, there was a I talked about in the second EMDR when I took my younger self out of the room and he walked over Jim's unconscious body and he said, I guess I win, referring to the wiggle game, which Jim introduced as that was the introduction to the molestation. And he said that if you wake up when I'm wiggling you awake, you win. And if you don't wake up, I win. And I said that like pretty briefly at the very beginning of the speech. And then I said this moment in EMDR at like the very end of the speech. And it got an applause break. Like people started. And I remember in that moment, I was like, oh, wow, thank you. thank you. You know, I was like so... It was so shocking to me, and yet, I was obviously so stoked on it, but I was like surprised. It was like, you know, I wasn't expecting that, and my dad said this thing after too, which was like, you know, you have to have been locked in the entire time in order to get that, and And it was just, yeah, so it was amazing. It was amazing to know that people were engaged in that way for that long. And so let's see. So yeah, so basically it wrapped up and I finished my speech and I was like gathering my things after, and people started coming up to me. And dude, it was the most intense sequence of like outpouring of positive responses I've ever received to, I mean, anything. It was sort of, it was just like, I mean, like one of the things that a lady came up to me and she said, "Hey, I've been working in this field for 20 years and that was the best thing I've ever seen." And I was like, holy cow. I mean, it was such an overflow of just compliments and like, you know, people, because I've been doing stand-up for so long now and I know, you know, this stuff, people will tell me, "Hey, I got molested too," or like share the things that have happened to them after shows, after like a 5-minute set, you know? So this is like what happens after you hear the whole story packaged in a way that this new way of packaging it, with all of these emotions intertwined. And it was so wild, dude, the intensity of the interactions after. I mean, people were being like, "Dude, you got to do this around the country and around the world. You need," like, people were coming up to me being like, "Hey, everyone that I know needs to see you do this." It was like, it was so wild, dude. It was literally like, and I remember I thought about this earlier today before recording, about how, you know, a past version of me would have, in a more unworthy state, where, you know, you're sort of resisting reality. If people are saying lots of nice things to you, the tendency to swat it away or bat it down or diminish what it is that you've done, because you don't believe that you're worthy of what's being said to you. I realized that, you know, I was letting all of this love land in a way that I haven't really fully done before, I don't think. And I just noticed it in my internal reactions to what was being said to me, which was just like, I was amazed by what people were saying, but I wasn't resistant to it. It's like when this lady's, yeah, like, "Hey, I've done this for 20 years. It's the best thing I've ever seen." I was like, oh my gosh, dude, thank you. Like, it was basically just like, thank you. I was just saying thank you. I wasn't undercutting what had happened. And I think that that is in large part because of feeling all of the rage the week before. Because again, like, as we, and this is what I talked about in the speech, it's like when we resist an emotion, we are restricting our ability to feel. Because feeling does not distinguish between positive and negative emotions. Like the feeling ability that we all have innately, if we resist any emotion, we are resisting all emotions because we are resisting our ability to feel. And, you know, we're putting energy into suppressing that rage from childhood, out of fear of feeling it. And that energy is being allocated away from feeling positive feelings like love. And so as we release that rage or whatever it is that's suppressed, we open up ourselves in so many ways. And we allow ourselves to feel feelings that in the past we may have felt unworthy of, or it just felt uncomfortable. It's like, this is too much love. And so I think it was just, yeah, it was just like this. Oh, and I forgot to say this too. During the speech, I talked about the whole rage sequence. I didn't talk about Lugia and stuff. That would have been too much detail for the time frame. But I talked about how this is still happening. You know, and it doesn't matter if it keeps happening. If stuff keeps coming up, it's always good. All that is it's just, all it means is that you can feel even better than you have. And you don't have to be resistant to the fact that stuff is still coming up. Just welcome it. Welcome it all in. And so that's what it was like. It was like I was letting the love land in the deepest way I have up until that point. And it felt amazing, dude. It felt amazing just like believing people. I feel like through the lens of unworthiness or resistance, it's very easy to convince yourself that people are saying this for ulterior motives, different reasons. They actually don't think it was good and just feel bad for you because you just said all of this stuff and, oh, poor kid, they just feel sorry for you and, like, you know, that type of lens. And then there's the lens of, I don't know. That was kind of my main lens, I think. It's just, they just don't really mean what they're saying. And whatever your brain fills that in with, just like, oh, okay, you know, I don't feel worthy of it, so I can't let any of this land. But this was the opposite. It was like, I certainly wasn't like, yeah, I'm so good at this. And yet I didn't, but I also didn't have to, it's not like I was like, yeah, that's the best shit you've seen in 20 years. but I didn't have to deny their reality because I wasn't resisting my own. I'm not denying my own reality, so I don't feel the need to deny somebody else's. Who am I to say that this wasn't, that you didn't love this, you know? And so that was just like right after the conference. That was right after my speech. Those were the immediate interactions. And then, you know, I had people being like, hey, do you like, can I represent you? Like, do you need management? There was somebody who was like, you know, I'll help you book all of this stuff. I'll help you get a higher rate. Do you need a lawyer to work on this? Do you have a contract lawyer who can like figure this out for you? Like, you know, people were like, hey, can I like pass your info along to all these other people that I need to book you? And like, it was just like so many people offering to help me for free, you know, without anything in return. They weren't trying to take advantage of me or any, there was no, it was just such like pure positive interactions. And I just kept going along with it. Dude, it was so epic. And I went out. My dad and I left. I didn't go to any other speeches that day because I was feeling super, super just like, honestly, just like really drained. I think it was just all the interactions, even though like every one of them was so amazing. I just remember being like, wow, that was a ton of social interaction and my battery needs to be recharged, which is something that I have not prioritized in the past. I mean, literally on the level of, and this was a trauma response of thinking that if I don't have everybody like me, if I don't hang out with everyone who wants to hang out with me all the time, they will abandon me and, I'll lose my friends and then we'll lose the war of Bainbridge Island, which is what I was interpreting the post-trial situation to be. I needed to make sure everyone was happy and that was the intense people-pleasing and all this stuff. So anyway, it felt like in the same way that I was letting go of the traumatic beliefs around being worthy of receiving, it was also like I was letting go of the sort of traumatized beliefs of prioritizing other people above myself or just not prioritizing myself. Like I knew that in that moment I needed to just like be in my room, or just like go leave the hotel. It was in like a, I don't remember the name of the hotel, but it was like this giant hotel. And it was like, they had a bar and like a social lounge area where like a bunch of people were hanging out. And this is afterwards, but I just, I needed to go. And so my dad and I went and played Frisbee, and it was just like, we got food, and it was just so amazing to decompress about all of it. And then, you know, my social battery charged up more, and I got business cards for the first time. And so I'd handed out a lot of business cards to people that I was talking to. And I got a text from a number that I didn't know being like, Sebastian, like a bunch of us are down at the bar. Like, what if you want to come hang out? And this is like probably like 10 o'clock at night or something, like, and I had like just gotten into bed. There was a part of me that didn't want to go. And then I called my dad, and he was like, you must go. Obviously this is like, you'll sleep plenty tomorrow or tonight, but just go, you know, this is networking. This is part of it. And also, like, you know, so anyway, I went and I got down there, and I was having these chats with people, and it was just like, you know, I felt like I had found a group of people that get me on such a deep level. You know, people that have been working with kids who have had experiences like me for decades, and people who also recognize what I am, who I am. You know, they're like, I think that a big part, well, this is one of the things people were saying, was like, they have never seen this approached in this way before. You know, like that level of lightness, bringing that to this dark topic and being like, you know, this is what's worked for me. I'm not trying to convince anyone of anything. This is just what worked for me. And I think it was just like, you know, all these people were so knowledgeable about all the things that I had referenced, you know, the whole sequence. They were like experts in all the different areas. And so it was so amazing talking to these people that really, really get it. And also were recognizing the potential for this way more than I was, you know, because these people have been going to these conferences for years, and you know, they know the ins and outs of the system in a way that I have only experienced once. So they immediately and that's what it felt like, was they were conveying how big this is and can be to me, and I was able to hear it without fighting it. And welcome it and be like, oh my God, dude, I'm so down. It was like, I just, every single person that I talked to, I was like, yes, I'm down to do your conference. I'm down to work with you. I'm down to do anything, really. I would just love to do, cause that's what I remember being on stage and finishing and being like, I just want to do that more and more. I want to do that all the time. That was expansive. It felt so good, dude. And I when I would tell people that was my first time doing it, they were like, there's no way. Like, and what I realized is, you know, through this podcast and what happened to you and just, you know, everything, you know, like the people in my life, I've spoken with so many people about this stuff. And really, it's like, that was the vibe of the speech, was like, we were chatting. And then thinking about it in the context of like, oh, that's why trying to memorize this speech felt so heavy and exhausting to do, because it's not the natural way that I do things. You know, like I don't have a script. When somebody asks me what I do, I don't turn, okay, well, here's, you know, I don't recite something. I talk about what it is in the moment, and it feels, and it always feels good. And so just sort of realizing that you can bring that anywhere, but especially on stage, regardless of how many people are there, it was so much expansion, dude. It was so much amazing stuff happening in such a short period of time. And I remember, yeah, being down there that night, hanging out with everyone and just being like, wow, this is, oh man, you know, these are my people. And as well as all these other people, you are my people listening and watching to this. It's like, we're all each other's people, I suppose, but like, it was just, you know, anyone who resonates with you that hard, you know, it's just like this, it's just this connection that feels so deep. Almost like we've known each other. I mean, yeah, I don't know, man. I think it was just so cool to see, to hear from all of these people who work in this field, who work with children, recognizing the impact. And in turn, me recognizing it and just allowing the whole thing to unfold. It was so, so freaking cool, man. And I think there was part of me too that, you know, I did have this realization that like, okay, this is, you know, I don't know what this role is, you know, like it's not like I'm a senior analyst or like some sort of statistic guy. But I've carved a role out for myself of just whatever this is, speaker, comedian, podcaster, this stuff that, you know, I feel like I've been working for many years. I mean, really like my whole life at this. And it feels like it's now coming together in a way that is like, it's even bigger. It's just, oh man, dude, I don't even know. I'm just so excited about all of it. And just to be like, I think from a primal perspective too, you know, like it's really nice to know that I have a way to support myself. And it was just like, oh my God, the fact that I got paid to do that, they flew me to Chicago and paid me to do that experience that I got so much benefit out of. And so many people got benefit out of, and like, it was just universal. Just everyone's just benefiting. Everyone's just feeling good about everything that happened. And so it was quite life-changing, completely transformative. And oh man, dude, I'm honestly still processing it. Obviously, as you can tell. Yeah, processing. It's funny, you don't think about I'm still processing it in terms of like good things generally. It's mostly like I'm processing something bad that happened. But it obviously can be the other way. And I'm also trying to not intellectualize it too much. Like just keep existing in the space of like, this is what it is. This is what reality is. You don't have to be worried about losing it. You don't have to be worried about fucking it up. It's happening because you're ready. And the more I can maintain just sort of this general knowing that it's all good, the more it really feels like it's all good. Dude, there was somebody from the FBI there, a couple of people who reached out and were like, this shout out to Carrie, dude. Oh, what an absolute. She was so, so cool, dude. It was basically like she was sending me these emails of all these people in the FBI that she'd reached out to on my behalf, being like, you gotta see this guy. We gotta book this guy. And I'm just like, this is so amazing, dude. It's so. Ah, man. I just had the thought. I'm like, man, am I bragging? And it's so funny now, you know, because you see a thought like that, and it's like, okay, even if everyone perceived it as that, it's okay, you know? I know how I feel about it. And the bragging, the worry about being perceived as bragging comes from fear. It's some sort of fear origination of people, probably a band, people being like, oh, he's bragging. He's not humble. He's blah, blah, blah. And then they're going to turn off the podcast and hate me forever. You know, it's also, it's clearly linked up with the same types of things. But you just watch it. Watch it and let it go. And it's like, I would rather feel how I'm feeling at risk of being labeled for bragging than suppress the positive feelings that I'm having and suppress the urge to share them out of fear of how they will be perceived. You know, it's just, I think it's just recognizing the underlying feeling associated with the thought, and the thought, what, and the feeling associated with that bragging thought was worry. I was worried for a moment. Actually, I don't even know if I was, it just, a thought popped in and then I was like, hang on a minute. That's, everything's fine. It's all good. Once again, don't have to worry about this. What's the plan? Let's delete the podcast. Fuck it. I'm not going to speak anymore. Dude, what? It's just lingering thought patterns. And that is, it's interesting too, because the momentum is so positive in my life right now where it feels like, the negative thoughts that pop in are becoming more and more noticeable because they're not the norm. So when one pops up, you know, it's like in a sea of positive thoughts, it's like you see like a little, like, I don't know what the analogy is, but you see a little thought. Or let's say it's like a bunch of bubbles, of thought bubbles that are all positive and like nice and blue or whatever. And then you see a little red thought bubble pop up and it's so noticeable because it's surrounded by blue. And you're like, that's out of place. That doesn't line up with what's happening anymore. And then it's just fine. Just let it go. It'll pop it by itself if you just, you know, don't feed it with energy. And so there we go. And then just following that train of thought, another thought that just popped in was, did I just get too diverted from what I was saying? Hey, man, everything's fine. Once again, it's all good. And it always will be good if you allow it to be. It's all good regardless, but you are the only one that can actually decide that it is all good. So let's see, getting back to it. Just had some tremendous conversations throughout the course of the conference. I stayed for the whole conference and just had, just amazing, amazing interactions. And, it feels like this, the beginning of, big stuff, and I'm so excited for it, and I'm so glad that everything unfolded in the way that it did, because it allowed me to have that experience at a deeper level of emotional capacity than I've been at before. You know, I think that now is the deep, I mean, maybe besides before I had any trauma happen to me, I mean, I guess you could argue that it is probably even deeper now, but it feels like my emotional capacity is deeper now than it ever has been. And the results of that are just more and more openness to whatever reality is presenting itself to be. And if that happens to be a bunch of really, really cool, nice, awesome people saying a bunch of really, really amazing things to me, that's great. I will welcome that. I wonder in a different reality, if I hadn't had that whole rage sequence with Lugia, like, I wonder if I would have had a harder time receiving what everyone was saying. I imagine so. But yeah, it's just this approach of like welcoming it all, however it is, whatever it is. And yeah, man. Truly, truly a remarkable sequence. And it just continues as per usual. So, yeah, I'm sure there's more to say. I know there is, but I can't remember it now. And that's okay. It's always okay. Yeah, I love you. And I'm so glad that you're here listening and watching. And thank you for being on this journey with me. I'm glad. I'm just so glad we're overlapping in our realities. And yeah, dude, I'll keep you posted. I'll include the clips. I'm going to post the at some point, or rather I'll post the recording of the speech. I want to make sure I get it synced up with the PowerPoint. But yeah, we'll make it work. And it's just exciting. I feel like I'm rambling, and that's fine. Ramble away. Feel free to ramble. Feel free to do whatever, whenever. All right. You guys rock. I'll see you in the next one. Peace.